So, I want you to picture this. You're, just walking down your street, or maybe you're driving through a different part of town.
Right, just going about your day.
Exactly. And you pass one of those houses, like, the exact kind. The roof is all sagging. The windows are boarded up with this rotting
Oh, yeah,
plywood.
and the weeds are like waist high in the front yard.
Yes. It just radiates this absolute neglect. And usually when you see that, you probably shake your head and think, what a failed building.
Which is, I mean, it's the natural reaction.
Right. But what if I told you that the building didn't fail at all?
Wait, what?
Yeah. What if that rotting wood and that overgrown yard is actually just the final visible symptom of a completely invisible collapse, one that happened like a decade ago?
That is, well, it's a massive paradigm shift
Yeah.
because we are so conditioned to just look at the physical decay,
Yeah.
right? The debris, the peeling paint.
Yeah, we just see the gross stuff.
Exactly. And we think that physical decay is the problem. We just treat the symptom. But that visible distress is really merely a trailing indicator. It's showing that systems broke down long, long before the first piece of wood ever started to rot.
And that reframing, that exact idea, is the core mission of our deep dive today. We got our hands on this custom, just incredibly fascinating prototype document.
Really is wild.
It's from the city of Los Angeles, dated 2026. It's called the Blightsphere Diagnostic PDC. And this document takes that abandoned, crumbling house you just picture and completely flips your understanding of it on its head.
It argues that a blighted parcel is not a failed building at all.
Right. It's a, what do they call it? A failed sphere.
Yes, a failed sphere.
So today we are going to unpack how this radical new diagnostic tool identifies urban decay before it's even visible to the human eye.
Which is mind-blowing on its own.
Totally. And we're going to explore how it uses a completely new scoring system to actually cure the rot. Plus, we'll get into how a fully automated AI tool can trigger eminent domain for the absurdly low cost of, get this, $7.60.
I mean, that detail alone is just incredible.
Right. And finally, how the city fundamentally rethinks who actually gets to step in and fix these broken properties.
And, this is precisely why this matters so much to you, the listener. Regardless of whether you care deeply about urban planning or if you just want to understand how complex systems operate.
Yeah, this isn't just some dry, boring policy brief about zoning laws.
No, not at all. It's a brilliant, almost ruthlessly logical example of systems thinking, but applied to real-world, very messy human problems. We're looking at how a municipality stops randomly slapping a Band-Aid on a problem and actually diagnoses the structural, systemic rot underneath.
Okay, so let's unpack this because to understand the cure, we first have to, understand the anatomy of the patient.
Right, the structure of the problem.
Yeah. And the entire foundation of this diagnostic is built on what it calls the six concentric sphere layers.
I love this concept.
It maps a single piece of property, not just as like a square of dirt with a house on it. It sees it as the center point of six overlapping systems, starting from the physical site and expanding all the way out to the macroeconomic environment.
So it's essentially a framework for mapping the invisible pressures acting on a single coordinate in space. And they number these layers, 0 to 5, right? Moving outward.
Exactly. So layer zero is the site sphere. This is the easiest one to grasp. It's just the parcel itself.
The lot dimensions, the actual structure, utility connections.
Yeah, the physical stuff. But then we immediately zoom out. Layer one is the block sphere. This is the immediate fabric of the street.
So your next door neighbors.
Right, the shared alleyways, or even the way a specific building casts a shadow onto the property right next to it.
And you can already begin to see the mechanism of how failure spreads here, because the site sphere directly acts upon the block sphere.
Oh, totally.
If that central house is full of debris and vermin, that physical reality spills over. It suppresses the land value of the perfectly intact, well-maintained bungalows sitting right next door.
Yeah, the localized decay becomes a direct negative externality for the immediate neighbors. They have to deal with the rats and the smell.
Exactly.
Then we zoom out again to layer two, which is the neighborhood sphere. This encompasses the broader named context of the area. We're talking about the architectural rhythm of the street. Like, are they all single-story craftsmen?
Right. And it includes the commercial corridors, pedestrian continuity, things like that.
Yeah. Then layer three is the infrastructure sphere. This is the service grid. How close is the nearest metro station? What is the actual load capacity of the sewer lines and the electrical grid sitting beneath that specific street?
Which is such a brilliant inclusion.
Why is that?
Because the infrastructure dictates the ceiling of what can actually be built there to replace the blight. You can't just plop a 50-unit megacomplex onto an electrical and sewer grid that was designed a century ago to only handle a duplex.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So then we get to the invisible layers, the outermost rings. Layer 4 is the policy sphere.
The red tape.
Exactly, the regulatory environment. This covers the code enforcement timeline, rent stabilization rules, and things like CEQA exposure.
Right, and for those who don't know, CEQA is the California Environmental Quality Act.
Yeah, it's a notoriously strict environmental review law that can tie up new construction in litigation for literal years.
It's a massive factor in California real estate.
Huge. And finally, layer 5 is the market sphere. This is the macroeconomic investment environment, the churn rate of ownership, the comparison between the raw land value and the actual cost to construct something new.
And the historical history of permit activity, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it's an incredibly comprehensive way to look at the forces shaping real estate.
It really is. It takes everything into account.
So trying to visualize this, it's like dropping a stone in a pond, but looking at the ripples in reverse.
Well, I like that analogy.
Yeah. The outermost ripples, like the market and the policy spheres, are actually crashing inward. And eventually, they hit the center, which is the physical site.
That's a great way to picture it.
But I have to play devil's advocate here for a second.
Go for it.
I get the theory of the 6 layers. It sounds smart. But practically speaking, this sounds like an administrative nightmare.
It sounds like a lot of paperwork.
Yeah. Like, why map out the entire macroeconomic market and comb through environmental review exposure just to figure out what to do with one single abandoned bungalow?
Well, the philosophy behind that extensive mapping is exactly what makes this document a breakthrough.
How so?
Think about how cities normally handle blight. They tear down the dangerous building, put out a bid, and developers just throw up whatever maximizes their profit.
Right, just whatever they can fit on the lot.
Exactly. But if you only fix the physical building layer 0, while the market and policy spheres remain broken, that shiny new building will eventually fail too.
Because the environment around it is still toxic.
Yes. The objective of the blight sphere diagnostic is to find the absolute smallest structural intervention that repairs the failed center sphere, while simultaneously rebalancing all those outer concentric spheres.
So it's about creating systemic harmony, not just, you know, facilitating demolition.
Precisely. You want the smallest fix that heals the whole system.
Okay, so if this failure sequence happens in reverse, with the outer ripples crashing inward, we really need to see how that actually plays out on a real street.
Right, we need an example.
And the document gives us one. It gives us a literal autopsy of a failure using a real-world prototype parcel. It's 267 South Avenue 18 in Lincoln Heights.
A real address.
Yeah. This specific property was given an 8.42 blight score by the diagnostic, and that makes it a tier 1 candidate for eminent domain.
Meaning the city can legally step in and seize the property.
Exactly. The document outlines this autopsy timeline showing how 3 of the 6 spheres suffered total failure.
And this autopsy timeline is just chilling because of how entirely predictable the collapse is once you see the data laid out.
It really is. So, the market sphere layer 5, the outermost ripple that failed first. The data pinpoints this failure around 2015.
Okay, so almost a decade before the city stepped in.
Right. There was 0 permit activity from that point onward. The owner completely withdrew their capital investment. But because this is the Los Angeles real estate market, they were still extracting land appreciation.
Of course.
The dirt itself became more valuable year after year, so the owner just sat on it, entirely abandoning their maintenance obligations.
Just waiting for the price to go up.
Yeah. The document makes a really sharp note of this. It says the owner received a value uplift, but civic goods were never delivered.
That is the crucial early warning sign right there. Capital flight happens silently.
Yeah, you can't see it.
Right. Nobody walking their dog past that house in 2015 knew the property had died, because structurally, it still looked perfectly fine. The roof was intact, but the financial engine keeping it alive had been turned off.
And without that financial engine, the next domino inevitably falls. The policy sphere fails next.
This is where the city comes in, right?
Yep. This stretches between roughly 2019 and 2024. The Los Angeles Department of Building and Safety, LADBS, finally gets involved. The enforcement apparatus engages. And here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, boy.
The bureaucratic system essentially ignores the physical reality of the property while pushing this endless mountain of paperwork. They run what the document calls a find-to-comply cycle.
It is the ultimate administrative trap.
Yeah.
It's literally a bureaucracy confusing activity with actual achievement.
The details are maddening. The city opened 8 separate enforcement cases on this property, and the cycle ran for 1,620 days.
Over 4 years.
Over 4 years. And the mechanism works like this. The city opens a violation, issues a financial penalty to the owner, and then, due to various administrative loopholes or paid fines, they somehow close the case without a single piece of physical remediation ever taking place.
Just shuffling paper.
Yes. The property became structurally invisible to the active enforcement stream. The spreadsheet said the case was resolved, the city patted itself on the back, but the house was actively rotting.
And because that policy sphere completely failed to constrain the decay, the rot finally reached the center.
Exactly. Finally, in 2025, the site's sphere layer zero collapses. The physical decay has accumulated unimpeded for a decade until it registers as extreme visual distress.
It finally looks like a blighted house.
Right. It scores an 8.6 out of 10 on the city's vision score. Vegetation is at a 9, debris is at a 9, abandonment is at a 9, and there is severe structural and roof distress.
It's just completely fallen apart.
Yeah. And just to make sure we are crystal clear on the sequence here, the money left the building 10 years before it actually looked like a hazard to someone walking down the street.
What's fascinating here is how unequivocally the data proves that point. The visible blight, the collapsed roof, the overgrown weeds is just the final, unavoidable symptom of an invisible, decade-long structural failure.
It's crazy.
The money fled in 2015. The regulations completely broke down by 2019. The wood didn't start visibly rotting to the point of structural failure until years later.
And what is truly remarkable is the technology that finally caught the sequence, because the city didn't figure this out by sending a human inspector with a clipboard to walk around Lincoln Heights.
Right, they used a completely different method.
They used the LA Blight Remediation Pipeline. It's this automated vision pipeline. It pulled Google Street View image data, ran it through Claude Vision AI to assess the physical condition of the property.
And they actually trained the AI to differentiate between a slightly messy yard and systemic structural abandonment.
Right. And then it cross-referenced that visual data with LADBS customer service requests, building permit history, and environmental burden data. It classified 187 different parcels this way across the entire city.
And do you remember the cost?
Oh my gosh, yes. The total computational run cost for analyzing all that data, $7.60.
It is staggering when you put it in perspective.
It's the price of a sandwich.
It's exactly. For the price of a standard latte, the city can now instantly map a 10-year systemic failure that human bureaucracies, with all their huge budgets and inspectors, were completely blind to for 1,620 days.
It's a complete game changer. So the diagnostic proves that the old way of handling blight, just maximizing the number of apartments you can stack on an empty lot to boost the tax base, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's a systemic failure.
Right. You can't just build your way out of it randomly.
So if the city isn't just handing this seized lot over to a developer to slap up a 50-unit complex, what is the actual mathematical fix for this specific property?
Well, that requires looking at the new key performance indicator, or KPI.
Okay, what is it?
The metric for success is no longer unit count or floor area ratio. A new metric is the sphere rebalancing score, or SRS, which brings us right back to the core philosophy, finding the smallest intervention necessary to heal the entire system.
So the proposed program for our prototype parcel on South Avenue 18 is actually surprisingly modest. It's a 2-unit structure plus an alley ADU.
And an ADU is an accessory dwelling unit. Basically a smaller secondary house on the same lot.
Right. This specific architectural program scored an 8.1 out of 10 on the sphere rebalancing score, categorizing it as a strong rebalancing.
And it is vital to look at the mechanics of why it scores an 8.1. That isn't just an arbitrary grade given by some urban planner.
No, it's mathematically weighted across those 6 concentric spheres.
Exactly. Let's break down those dimensions.
Yeah. So site sphere repair makes up 30% of the grade. In this scenario, doing a full demolition of the rotting house and building a code-compliant structure resolves all 5 of the physical distress conditions the AI flagged.
Makes sense. The physical blight is gone.
Then block sphere repair is weighted at 25%. By designing the new building to match the exact setbacks of the neighboring houses and utilizing an alley ADU, they preserve the natural daylight for the neighbors and eliminate the visual blight.
Right, so the neighbors aren't suddenly staring at a massive concrete wall.
Exactly. Neighborhood compatibility is another 20%, because the two-unit program matches the consistent single-family rhythm of that specific street.
It heals the street rather than dominating it with an out-of-scale structure.
Yeah. And finally, policy and market repair make up the last 25%. The program structurally prevents the decay from ever happening again by attaching an ownership covenant and an occupancy obligation to the deed.
So they can't just let it rot again.
Right. So the two-unit plus ADU is the precise medical intervention this specific patient needs. But here is the massive administrative
The
hurdle.
disposition cascade.
Yes. Because this property hit that 8.42 blight score, it is a Tier 1 eminent domain candidate. The city is stepping in to take the land, so who actually gets the right to build this new two-unit structure?
And the document outlines this four-step disposition cascade to determine who buys the land from the city.
And this cascade is where the policy really shows its teeth. It's a direct engineered response to the market failures and capital flight of the past decade.
Step one is pretty standard.
Yeah. Owner final notice. The negligent owner who let the property rot gets 90 days. It's a final compliance notice paired with a fair market value buyout offer.
They can either finally fix it themselves
Yeah.
or take the check and leave.
Right. If they ignore it, the city formally seizes the parcel and we move to step two. And step two is where my jaw hit the floor.
It's so counterintuitive.
It really is. Adjacent owner priority purchase.
Ah.
The immediate next door neighbors are given a 45-day exclusive window to purchase the remediated land at fair market value.
Yep, they get first dibs.
Wait, hold on. Usually, next door neighbors are the loudest NIMBY, the not in my backyard crowd trying to stop any new development. Why on earth is the city rewarding them with first dibs on the real estate over a professional builder?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it is actually one of the most profound concepts in the entire document. The authors call it proximity freedom.
Proximity freedom.
Think about the actual lived experience of those neighbors. For 10 long years, while the absentee owner was sitting entirely insulated, extracting land appreciation, the people living next door were bearing the literal brunt of the decay.
Oh, yeah.
They were forced to look at extreme visual blight every single day. They were living next to a severe structural and fire safety risk. Their own property values were actively suppressed by the rotting house next door. They are the primary victims of the negative externality.
So the logic is essentially like reparations for enduring the blight.
Precisely. Because they involuntarily absorbed the damage of the failed market and policy spheres, the logic of the diagnostic dictates that they hold the strongest moral and economic claim to the newly remediated land.
That is fascinating.
If they want to buy it and expand their footprint, they get the absolute first right of refusal.
That fundamentally redefines who a city government is actually serving.
It really does.
But, let's say the neighbor doesn't want the land or simply can't secure the financing. We move to step three, neighborhood builder RFP.
The request for proposals.
Right. The city issues an RFP, but restricts it exclusively to qualified residential builders operating within that specific city council district. They have a 60-day window to respond.
And the critical mechanism here is that they are required to start building within 18 months.
To prevent land banking. Plus, the project requires a 10-year affordability covenant on at least one of the units.
We should really highlight why that 18-month rule is so revolutionary.
Yeah, explain the land banking.
Land banking is this predatory practice where a well-capitalized developer buys cheap, blighted land and simply sits on it for years. They wait for the surrounding neighborhood to gentrify before they build.
So they keep the blight alive intentionally.
Yes, intentionally, to maximize their future margin. The 18-month requirement forces immediate neighborhood healing.
It demands local accountability. And if no local builder takes the job, we finally hit step four, open competitive bid. The land goes to public bid for any developer, but that strict anti-land banking timeline still applies.
The entire cascade is engineered to ensure that the wealth generated by fixing the blight stays as intimately close to the epicenter of the blight as possible. It is neighborhood defense executed through municipal policy.
That cascade works beautifully for a standard, relatively stable neighborhood like Lincoln Heights, where there's an isolated bad actor.
Yeah.
But what happens when an entire geographic area of the city is already suffering from massive, compounded systemic neglect?
That is the ultimate stress test for any urban policy. How does the diagnostic handle extreme historical disadvantage?
The authors account for this with a mechanism called the compound externality adjustment.
It utilizes Kalenbarra Screen, or CES.
Right, which is a state mapping tool that identifies communities disproportionately burdened by pollution, poverty, and socioeconomic factors. The document explicitly outlines a different set of mathematical rules for highly burdened tracts.
Specifically, those hitting the 90th percentile or above.
Yeah, which covers massive sections of South LA and East LA. In a standard neighborhood, when calculating that sphere rebalancing score, policy and market repair make up 25% of the total score. But in these extreme burden tracts, that weight almost doubles. It jumps to 40%.
And the weight given to the physical site repair actually drops to compensate for that shift.
It's like treating a scraped knee on a perfectly healthy person versus treating a scraped knee on a patient with a severely compromised immune system.
That's a great way to think about it.
For the healthy person, you just clean the physical site, slap a Band-Aid on it, and the body's natural systems heal the rest. But for the compromised patient, the physical scrape isn't the real danger. The systemic infection is.
Right. The medical treatment has to be drastically more aggressive on a systemic level to ensure the infection doesn't return and spread.
Exactly.
That is the exact dynamic at play in these vulnerable neighborhoods. In those 90th percentile tracts, the infrastructure and neighborhood spheres are already under immense historical pre-existing load.
So if a developer comes in and only fixes the site sphere,
if they just build a beautiful, shiny new duplex.
Right. The compound failure of the surrounding environment remains completely intact. The rot will inevitably seep back in.
And the data the city uncovered when running the AI vision pipeline over these extreme burden tracts is genuinely terrifying.
They discovered a phenomenon they labeled invisible blight,
which represents the ultimate catastrophic failure of the feedback loop between a municipal government and its citizens.
The AI pipeline flagged numerous parcels with extreme visual distress. We're talking weeds taking over the lot, huge debris piles, collapsed roofs. But when they cross-referenced that with the city databases, there were absolutely zero active customer service requests on record.
Nobody was calling the 311 hotline to complain.
Nobody. And consequently, the city wasn't issuing any violations. Both the policy sphere and the infrastructure sphere had failed simultaneously, and the property was entirely off the city's radar.
It was structurally invisible to the bureaucracy,
even though it was a glaring, dangerous physical hazard to the people living right next door to it.
This raises an important question about how we govern, because code enforcement in almost every major city relies entirely on citizen complaints.
Right. The squeaky wheel gets the grease.
But if a community has learned over decades of systemic neglect that the city simply does not respond to their calls, they stop calling. Learned helplessness sets in.
Wow.
The data set goes completely dark. The brilliance of the AI pipeline is that it circumvents that dark data problem by just looking objectively at the physical truth in the street.
It forces the city to see what the residents have been seeing all along. And that is why the adjusted mathematical weighting is so crucial. You have to force the developer to fix the policy and market conditions because the city's standard enforcement tools have completely abandoned those specific neighborhoods.
It is a profound synthesis of high technology and deep structural empathy.
It really is. So what does this all mean for you? We started this deep dive looking at a simple abandoned bungalow, just a rotting piece of wood and some overgrown weeds.
And we ended up unpacking a radical, multi-layered diagnostic framework.
Yeah. A framework that uses AI and concentric systems thinking to prioritize neighborhood healing over sheer housing density. It means the future of city planning might finally look at the actual root causes of urban decay rather than just treating the visible symptom.
They're finally moving from treating the building to treating the sphere.
Exactly.
True knowledge, true understanding of the complex environment you live in comes from connecting these exact dots.
Yeah.
It is about training your eye to look past the physical structures and see the invisible market forces, the capital flight, and the bureaucratic policy loops that literally shape the physical streets you walk on every single day.
Once you see the spheres operating around you, you really cannot unsee them.
You really can't.
And that brings me to one final lingering thought I want to leave you with today. This six-sphere diagnostic is an undeniably brilliant way to analyze real estate and municipal urban planning. But what if we applied this exact same concentric sphere thinking to the other failed systems in our own lives?
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. Like, if a major project at work fails or a personal habit completely falls apart, We usually blame the immediate visible collapse. We blame the sight sphere.
We blame the symptom.
Exactly. But what were the invisible outer spheres? You know, the macroeconomic market of our personal energy or the rigid policy of our daily routines that actually collapsed years before the visible failure finally happened. Think about it.